A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on April 18, 2004, entitled Resurrection, A Shift in Perspective. The texts for the sermon are Acts 7, verse 54 through 8, verse 1, and chapter 9, verse 19. 1 Corinthians 13, verses 1 through 8, and John 20, verses 19 through 30. Copyright Grand Valley State University.
It's a marvelous way to celebrate Eastertide with a dance of creation. It was an ancient goddess of fertility named Oster who gives us the name Easter. And, of course, the ancient people prior to the axial period, 0800 to 600 before the Common Era, who celebrated their religious observances according to the rhythms of nature, the cycles of the year. And so what a beautiful way for us to celebrate the coming alive of the earth on a beautiful day like this, with the flowers budding and the buds bursting, to celebrate the goodness of God and the wonders of creation. Resurrection as an experience of life after death was really an idea, a conception that came to the fore shortly before the birth of Christ. There isn't much in the Hebrew scriptures about any life after death. They don't even worry about it. The goodness of God in the land of the living was the blessing of God for the people of Israel. But in those couple of centuries before the birth of Christ, there was increasing persecution. And in the books that we call the apocryphal books that were filled with apocalyptic expectation, the intervention of God at the end of history, we find resurrection as an idea coming to the fore. And the reason that resurrection came into the consciousness of people was the fact that there were righteous, God-fearing people who were witnessing to their faith in God who were being killed. They were called the righteous martyrs. And as the community considered the fact that these people were being killed for their refusal to deny their faith in God, They looked at one another and said, must not God in justice vindicate these righteous ones who have died for their faith and their honor of God? And so resurrection came to be an idea, a hope, an expectation that somehow or other in the end, those who had died for their faith would be vindicated by resurrection, by God. When the community of Jesus' followers, following his crucifixion, experienced him as with them still. When they experienced still, after his crucifixion, the grace that he purveyed, the love that he embodied, the freedom that he offered, they said, he is not dead. He's living. And from their depression and their fear and their crushed hopes, they had a shift in perception. And resurrection is what they called it. Resurrection is a shift in perception. It is a miracle. It is a miracle of love. It is the experience of an insight, the gaining of an understanding that is life-changing, that is life-transforming. Resurrection is a shift in perception. Now, of course, we say today perception is everything, and there is something to that, but that's not what I mean. What that means is that the empirical reality out there isn't the issue. It's our perception of that empirical reality. And I do know the physicists among us would tell us that the observer affects the observed. But I'm not going to get into all that philosophical stuff. This is just a kind of a straightforward claim this morning that a shift in perception, a change in understanding, is resurrection. And it is life-changing. It is wonderful. The shackles of our tombs, the stones are rolled away, the shackles fall off, the scales come from our eyes. And suddenly we get it. We see it. I think really that's what happened in the experience of those followers of Jesus in the wake of his crucifixion. Although in Luke and in John there certainly are resurrection stories that seem to intentionally want to emphasize a physical bodily presence, that is not the majority of the resurrection accounts at all. Those stories are all over the map in the New Testament, as you might expect in the light and the wake of an experience like this. But most of them are appearances, they're visions. And that's why I take the story of Paul this morning. Paul had a shift in perception. We saw him first at the stoning of Stephen. There he is, consenting to Stephen's death, this violent death which is the consequence of a religious absolutism and dogmatism that is threatened by any other understanding that believes that somehow or other God is served with that kind of violent reaction. I suppose if it was the 21st century, and if it was a part of the already boring and disgusting presidential campaign into which we find ourselves, it might have been Paul standing up and saying, "I, Paul of Tarsus, approve of this martyrdom, or this killing." That's what he was doing. They laid their cloaks at his feet, they said. And then he's on his way to Damascus, still breathing out threatenings, ready to murder, ready to hail people into court, to bring them to Jerusalem bound, men and women, those who were followers of the way, because Paul, this absolutist, this dogmatist, this angry religious man, there is no anger like religious anger. There is no more obsessive, compulsive behavior than stems from bad religion. And Paul was the epitome of it. And then there's the light and there's the voice. What's going on with Paul? How do we know? We can psychologize it all day long. Maybe there was something already simmering in his soul as he watched Stephen die. Maybe there was something in him, some decency in him, that would betray the violence of his actions. But in any case, he's a broken man, and he's blinded, but then he sees, and after years of assimilation becomes the great apostle, who in the midst of the Corinthian congregation of which he was the founder, in the midst of their own alienation and disturbances and divisions, could write to them of the indispensability of love, describing love in a beautiful fashion, such that we call it the hymn of love and read it still with great profit. Paul experienced a vision. For him, it was resurrection and a shift in perception created for him a whole new life. That's what resurrection is. It's that movement from being all bound up to freedom. It's that movement from defensiveness and stinginess to graciousness and openness. It's the loosening up of all of that that binds us up inside and makes us less than we really want to be. That's resurrection. It's a shift in perception, and it's a miracle. I received an envelope full of goodies from my friend Jim Dykhouse through his mother Nancy this week, and she said, "Jim gives you these things, read and throw away." Well, Jim always gives me packages of goodies, which he clips down in Chicago, knowing that we live here in his boonies and we don't get much of that good stuff. So I always look forward to what Jim gives me. One thing I didn't throw away was a piece from the Chicago Tribune. It's the story of Richard Mell. Richard Mell's an alderman in Cook County. He was an old ward boss. Some of you are too young to remember the days when Chicago was crime-free because it was so corrupt at the top. When Richard Daley ruled and the old ward bosses kept everything in tight rein. Richard Mell was one of those. In the 80s, he was rather notorious. His picture appeared on top, standing on his desk, waving his arms. I think it was sometime in the 80s. In 1987, there was an ordinance that was before the Cook County Commissioners asking for the protection of people of homosexual orientation to protect them from discrimination. The ordinance was defeated 30-18. Richard Mell voted against it, voted it down. The next day, his daughter Deborah turned 18. He wondered about Deborah. 2 years later, she revealed herself. She was lesbian. She took off for San Francisco, where the lifestyle was easier than in Chicago. She was gone for 9 years. She came back, and coming back, was rejoined with her family. Never was there total brokenness with them, but at least they had missed a lot of family time. This past March, there were 300 protesters outside the Cook County building, and Deborah was one of them. They were demanding rights for same-sex marriage. She somehow or other bumped into a plainclothes lieutenant of the police force, and whatever happened, she was locked up, arrested, handcuffed, brought, locked up. Richard Mell, the alderman, the county official, and his daughter's locked up. And so she says, as at the end of this article, as he came to her locked up, "I was worried he might be angry." Far from it. He had a huge smile on his face and hugged me. I started to cry. I think he started to cry too. And he told me what a good daughter I am. A shift in perception is a miracle of love. And it frees us. And that's resurrection. It doesn't happen necessarily. One of the, in my estimation, most infamous leaders of the so-called Christian right is Randall Terry. He's the head of Operation Rescue, which aims at Planned Parenthood, and his inflammatory rhetoric has been responsible for the killing of abortion doctors at clinics, abortion clinics. You perhaps have seen him on TV. Most inflammatory rhetoric conceivable. In the May issue of Out magazine, coming to the newsstands this week, his son Jamil, 18 years old, writes an article in which he acknowledges that he's gay. If you saw CNN, Aaron Brown, one night this past week, you saw Aaron Brown interviewing Randall Terry, who expresses his grief and his pain, but who continues to spout that same hard line of the immorality of homosexuality and of the devastating judgment that will follow its acting out, etc., etc. At the end of the interview, in his own inimitable style, Aaron Brown said, "Mr. Terry, this must be very difficult for you. But let me ask you one more question. In the light of this revelation from your son and his obvious pain, do you at all question some of the rhetoric and the tactics that you've used in the past?" And Randall Terry's answer in so many words was no. Because Randall Terry would rather be right than loving and peaceful. And so it doesn't happen automatically. One has to be open to a miracle. As I thought about that, I thought about my own experience. I remember, it must be 30 years ago now, a letter from a young man, a letter with pain such as I had never read on paper before, whose spirit was crushed and bruised because a pastor had rejected him in his homosexuality. And I remember the next painful, most painful letter I ever received, maybe a dozen years ago or so. Same thing, only this time the rejection, like Randall Terry, was from a father. And I thought about my own experience. I thought about how fortunate I have been to meet people concretely in their humanity and to come to experience them in that diversity and to come to love them just as they are. I thought about, 14, 15 years ago, when Rabbi David Hartman came to Muskegon in the Jewish Christian Dialogue, and this man, so full of the love of God, so overflowing with warmth, said, "Do I have to deny my truth? Do you have to deny my truth to have your truth? Do you have to deny my joy to have your joy?" And that was the day he dialogued all day long with Krister Stindl, and those two beautiful human beings, one of the most brilliant and wonderful rabbis in the world and one of the most beautiful New Testament scholars in the world, and I saw them loving each other. And I thought, "Dear God, that's resurrection. That's a miracle of love. That's a shift in perception," which has enabled me then to move fully into that arena with joy, with freedom. And thanks to Boyd Wilson, our resident professor of world religions at Hope College, he brought Diana Eck to Hope this past Tuesday. She gave a marvelous lecture. Nancy and I have had dinner with her, so we know her. But it wasn't just that personal relationship. It was just this marvelous lecture in which she painted for us our world as it is. She was not saying our world ought to be this way or that way. She was saying this is the reality which we live. This pluralistic reality, pluralism in religion, pluralism in peoples of all kinds mixing up in this great global community of which we are a part, like it or not, with all of its implications in every dimension of our life. And as I sat there and I listened to her portraying this in such a positive way, the possibilities of the acceptance of the other in the diversity, not trying to wipe out all differences, but embracing one another and celebrating one another in our respective diversity. And I felt so light, and I felt so free, and I felt so thankful to be able to say, "Yes, yes." And then the question and answer period, a young man stood up, well-spoken, respectful, who said, "I am an exclusivist." And he made his witness very competently and very respectfully. And I looked at him and I loved him because I saw in him myself when I was a student at Hope College, who would have been threatened to death by this marvelous lecture of this wonderful woman, wonderful scholar. And I knew him, even though he doesn't perhaps know of himself what I know of him. And I project myself onto him to be sure. But in doing so, I know that there's a knot in the pit of his stomach. I know that there is a defensiveness that rises within him. I know that there is an anxiety. There is a fear that has to be raised by the wonder of the stories that were told by this articulate scholar, Diana Eck. And I thought of myself and thanked God for the kind of experiences that have affected a shift in perception, that have been for me resurrection. And this message is not about pluralism in religion or in government. It is not about homosexual orientation or same-sex marriage. It is about a shift in perception, about that thing that puts a knot in your stomach, that causes your face to flush and your blood pressure to rise. It's about those issues whose button being pushed, you feel yourself uneasy, unsure, causing some of you, perhaps, to strike out vociferously, and others of you simply to slink into the shadows full of dis-ease. This sermon is about you and those things that are unresolved in your heart and in your soul. And God knows in our world today, polarized as we are about everything, we need to disband our egos long enough to allow the possibility of a shift in perception that can lead us from being bound up to freedom, from anger to peace, from violence to embrace. In this global community, which is so small that we have to learn how to celebrate one another in all of the diversity, this sermon is an invitation to you to be honest about the things that knot your stomach, and mar your spirit, and trouble your soul. An invitation open yourself to a shift in perception, which is a miracle of love, which could be the first day of the rest of your life. I, Richard Rem, recommend it.